Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. Before we dive in talking about the kneecap and the patella and what you can do about it, you know, I really want to address something that's overlying under all our podcasts, which is movement. And feeling the ability to get back into movement really comes from all access. We give you tools in terms of exercises and what you can do. However, it's also about how we're treating our bodies on the inside, what we're putting in our bodies to help support those joints to feel comfortable to move, and the fluids to feel like they have the ability to slide and glide and give us access into our movement. And one thing that we've created with the Genius brand to help bring this to people is through a Genius Mobility joint supplement. And we put in it all of the things that really help to combat inflammation within the body and really reduce inflammation, but not only that, but help to support collagen, help to support naturally occurring glycosamine and hyaluronic acid and all of these things that help our bodies to just move and feel better and have a little bit of decreased pressure and inflammation. And that's all through the Genius Mobility product. All it takes is one little scoop a day to really get the effects that can be long lasting. And I know I enjoy it. If you like fruit, it's such an easy way to just pop it in your water, mix it up, and drink it quickly. I love to enjoy mine specifically after a workout, but I'm telling you, it really helps to support the body. So if you haven't checked it out yet, go to the link in our show notes and just check out Genius Mobility. It is available on Amazon, and it really is just one scoop a day. It's so easy to get this access into your body to move and feel better.
All right, diving in on another podcast on the knee. So we're going to talk into patellar tracking issues. And we've talked about patellofemoral syndrome before, right?
Was that? We definitely have talked about patellofemoral.
Episode 10?
Patellofemoral syndrome.
It was a long time ago.
But we also re-aired it, I believe.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Basically, what patellofemoral syndrome is the front of the knee pain, right? So whether you're getting it when you're walking, squatting, working out, running, go listen to that episode because we did a lot of information on it. So,
and I think that we just want to talk more specifically about patellar tracking because when people are having this patellofemoral syndrome, I think one of the first thing providers might want to say or people from the outside who are trying to analyze their movement might want to say is like, oh, your patella is tracking incorrectly, or your patella is tracking laterally or to the outside, and we need to fix that. That's why you're having that knee pain. And we want to dive into if that's actually the case.
Yeah. And what is necessary for us as providers, as physical therapists or clinicians, is that we do provide a diagnosis and a reason why you're having pain. So this is why physical therapists, you know, traditionally are going to look at structures, because we need a reason for ourselves and for you, for the insurance company, for everything happening as to why you're having this pain.
Yeah.
And as much as that is important, it's also, it could be damaging in terms of the mindset. Well, now my kneecap isn't doing what it's supposed to be doing, right? And so I'm now scared to go do workouts or things that's going to bend my knee, which is walking, because now my kneecap isn't tracking the correct way. So it can add a lot of detrimental signals to the mind when we start putting this kind of language onto a patient. That's why we want to talk about it.
And I think that, like you said, as providers and as like clinicians who are trying to be detectives and like, we might not be doing it maliciously. Hopefully we aren't doing it maliciously, finding this why, like giving a patient like, oh, this is why this is happening. I think a lot of the times as providers, we think that's very helpful and like, oh, this is something that we need to address. And maybe it is. And maybe it is something that would really be beneficial for that person to address. But when we, as a provider, say, oh, you have patellofemoral tracking issues, and this is why, and this is why you're having your pain, it gives us a lot of definitives that we, as a person, may grab onto. Oh, this is why I'm having that pain. I need to fix this. Otherwise, my pain will never go away.
Right.
And then sometimes if we work on that and the pain doesn't go away, then it adds to that frustration even more. Well, why did this not work? Or you'll go see another person or friend who's a PT, who's a movement professional, and then they'll give you a different why.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they'll say, oh no, that's not why. It's because your glute's not firing enough and you need to fire your glute up more and you need to use your hips more. And now you have all these competing theories in your head as to why you're getting this knee pain.
Right. So it could be really confusing. And then on top of that, it's, you know, what we end up doing, like, do we need tape then to fix it? Is there something that's going to move my kneecap back into place? And then if that is what is technically fixing or correcting it, well, then how long do I have to have this tape on? Does my knee eventually correct on its own, or do I always have to tape my knee then in order for it to track properly when I move? That's where it just perpetuates, or it could potentially perpetuate, this fear response. Well, I can't then move unless I get my knee taped properly. And oh, well, this person taped it different than this person. So now it's like, I can only trust one person and the other, you know, it's just like, there's so many mind things that can happen when we're talking about patellar tracking. So that's, again, why we just want to bring it to the surface. Let's answer and ask these questions and then see what we can together detect and see what's really happening.
It's funny you even bring that up about, like, needing a certain person to tape. Like, I don't know, growing up in gymnastics, but I know that I had football teammates that would only let a certain person tape their ankles, or only let a certain person do their shoulder wrap because they had done it a certain way once that made them feel a certain way. And again, feeling safe is important, especially when you're competing, especially when you're doing movement and stuff. So there could be something to that, but just showing how psychological this thing is of, oh, they taped it that perfect way that one time that made me feel great. That must have been what I need.
Right.
You know, and how we, like, just connect with those things emotionally to the point where I'm not going to feel good competing or running or playing my sport or doing my activity unless I have this person do it this way, or I have this certain thing.
I would say we got to the point where we just started taping our own ankles and everything in gymnastics, and you would figure out the way that you needed it done for yourself. So you just wanted to do it yourself because no one could do it tight enough or the right way or at the right ankle, or not ankle, but the right, like, pull and force that we needed to, that stability and everything. But it's actually interesting because I didn't have knee issues going through gymnastics. And I mean, I talked about this a little bit on my pain journey story as well, so you can listen back to that podcast. But what I did discover is that I had tracking issues when I got into PT school because of evaluating and assessing the way that our bodies looked and the structure of our bodies and everything. So technically, I have patellar tracking issues.
Yeah, because you have what we would call squinting patella, right? Where your patella look like they're tilting inward a little bit, and then it can almost kind of look like they're squinting, like a squinting eyeball or something at you.
Like they're cut, like when I stand and straighten my knees, my kneecaps, think of them kind of like coming in and down toward each other. However, if I'm just sitting on the table with my legs extended straight, then it looks like I have the patellar, the lateral tilt, which that just means that the inside of my kneecap is kind of coming up in the in the middle. And my kneecap itself, rather than resting like perfectly symmetrical and parallel to the ground, it is pulling to the side, right? And so the edge of my knee on the outside, that kneecap is kind of falling down and the inside is coming up, if you can imagine that.
Yeah. So, I mean, now we're moving into talking more about the tracking itself of these patella and how they move in this groove that they're in. And so if we just look at the patella or the kneecap itself, it kind of sits on top of this femur, the big, huge thigh bone. And at the bottom of the femur, there are these condyles. So we get this groove that people say, like, oh, that's the groove that the patella is supposed to ride in nice and perfectly. Mm-hmm. And if it tracks any different way in that groove, or if it's tilting any different way, then it's wrong, right?
Right.
And that's what people will, again, grab onto and say, oh, see your patella, it's tracking slightly to the outside, or it's tracking slightly this way. But you just outline, you have your patella doing some different things.
Yeah.
But do you have pain?
I don't. I mean, there will be times, like if I haven't warmed up properly, or if I haven't been doing a lot of explosive type work and all of a sudden I go do a HIIT workout randomly or I'm going to do like lunge jumps randomly or I just start running without having any type of you know, warm up to my lower body, then sometimes I can feel like a slight twinge of that anterior to the front of my knee pain. But it's momentarily, it doesn't last very long. And I think because I psychologically know that it's not wrong and it's not bad, like I did not even wake up my structures around my kneecap to be able to suddenly take on forces. So that's on me for not warming up properly, right? But I know that it's not detrimental, bad. And the more that I move, the less that I feel it. So then I continue the workout and by the end, I feel fine.
So one of my questions would be like, we have so many providers that try to address form and biomechanics. And we have so many providers that want to address these things. But then we have all this literature that comes out where we're just like, oh, it doesn't matter what it looks like. It doesn't matter if, you know, you have slightly different form. That's not causing your pain. That's not 100% the reason that you're having this knee pain. It's has to do with some other factors. So like, to what degree should we even worry about addressing these things?
Yeah. Well, I think what is cool and we'll link it is the study that showed, you know, we're still trying to even figure out what normal tracking is like, because if we assessed a ton of quote unquote healthy individuals, which I would consider myself a healthy individual. I don't complain of knee pain on a regular.
When's the last time you went to the doctor to confirm that?
This is a self-diagnosis.
We're healthy.
But, you know, when I can work out, I move on a daily basis and I don't have pain. Okay. So that's, I'm going to qualify myself
functionally as a functionally
healthy person, not no knee pain, random twinges every now and then, but it's not a consistent pattern. So
when is it important to address these things, these different movement variations?
So I would say first we get to look at and consider the fact that it's, we don't know quote unquote what healthy is. We assume that it is when your kneecap can track perfectly down in that trochlear groove, which we talked about, like in that little groove space that it's supposed to lie on. But we don't even know that if it's tracking one way or another, what we're saying is that it's increasing the forces underneath that kneecap and causing some compressive or shear action underneath where that kneecap rubs, which can cause some irritation to the cartilage. But we also know that cartilage is a neural and avascular, which means it doesn't necessarily have those nerve endings that are going to elicit that pain response to the brain.
Yeah, like the cartilage itself tissue. And I think that's an important point to bring out, because like when we have extra force or extra shear force through the cartilage itself, that may not be what is sending or jolting those pain signals to us. It may be when different structures start to feel some of that pressure, start to feel a lack of space when they're moving around. Maybe we have fat pads that are very highly innervated or different bursa that are sensing what's going on around the joint. And they may sense, oh, we have a little bit less space here. I'm going to kick out some more fluid, or I'm going to kick out some more stuff to, maybe they're trying to help give a little more lubrication. But in reality, then they're just starting to create less space, which might create inflammation and some sort of pain response.
Yeah. So essentially what we're saying is that we can't necessarily just say that the poor tracking is now affecting my cartilage and that's what's causing pain. So I think that's an more of an old school myth that it could be, again, the bursa, there has to be something else that's affecting the fluids within the tissue that's affecting the inflammation. And then that's how we're kind of starting to feel and elicit that pain response. But I mean, your cartilage can also take on a lot of pressure.
Yeah. I mean, our knees are built to handle that. Going upstairs, if we're going upstairs quickly, you're putting 8, 9, 10 times your body weight through your knee. And again, sometimes I think we get caught in this, like, is it the chicken or the egg? Like, what came first? Were we showing this really poor form, what we would in big quotes consider like poor biomechanical form before the pain? Or is it something that we're doing in an uncontrolled manner? Mm-hmm. And the reason that we're starting to feel the pain is because we've done it for an extended amount of time. We have kind of lived into our own biases for movement as a person. I know I have mine. I know you have yours. If we're not aware of those, and we just allow ourselves to continue doing those every day without checking it, without doing something different, that's when we might start to overstress a certain area. Yeah. Again, if our form looks slightly different, but we're aware of that and we're doing some different priming exercises, or we're trying to do a few things that are going to activate muscles that will allow us to control through our specific range, who is someone else to tell us that we're doing it incorrectly mm-hmm. if we're doing it in a way that we know feels supported within our body?
And we actually build up the musculature continued around it in yeah. order to build that up. So all of this to continue saying, like, is it bad if my kneecap is not tracking perfectly? I think we can find studies that prove both. We can find studies that say, you know, we're looking at the tracking issues and yeah. people who have patellofemoral pain syndrome, which is just that front of the kneecap pain, yeah. right? They're saying like, oh, well, you don't have as much quad force, or you don't, or the yeah. it looks like your patella might be tracking a little bit differently, where we have other studies that say, you know, we can't really determine where the patella is tracking and yeah. and how the how that's even affecting the forces at the knee. So I think because we have these two conflicting results, we can't ultimately say, and because I am a healthy person who is telling you that if you assessed my knee, you would find some tracking issues, 100%. Yeah. You would say, oh, like, for those who know, increased Q angle just means, you know, from my hip to my knee, I have mm-hmm. an angle that looks like my knees go in more. I have mm-hmm. that squinting patella. I have that lateral tilt. I have all these things around my kneecap that look like it should elicit a lot of pain when I move, but yet I can deep squat past 90 degrees under load and not have any pain.
Yeah. Again, so it's more a matter of us assessing the things within our body that may be impacting what's going on at the knee. And we haven't really talked a lot about everything that attaches through the patella, which not a lot of things actually attach through the patella, but all the things that are going on around the patella, at the hip, at the foot and ankle, that might affect slightly how the patella tracks, that we should be looking at instead of just solely looking at, okay, what is that knee doing? How is that patella tracking? I need to change something specifically at the knee.
Yeah. Right?
It's a matter of, are we starting to have pain?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's realize that we're having pain. Now, what can we change about the whole package that might change how that knee's feeling? Can I change a little bit about what I'm doing down at my foot and ankle? Can I change some hip exercises or hip mobility things that I'm doing before I go on runs? It's about assessing that whole package rather than just scoping and honing in on the knee.
Yeah, and we also know, because this is something that we have seen people get diagnosed with still to this day, is that, oh, your kneecap, you know, is not tracking correctly. And so we need this muscle called your VMO.
Yeah.
which is this small muscle on the inside of the knee to activate better. It's not activating. And then
the VMO is going to pull that kneecap.
It's going to pull that kneecap back into place. Yeah. And that's actually very old.
Yeah, we see that when we talk about lateral tracking of the patella. Yeah. So if the patella is tracking kind of to the outside of the leg or outside of the knee, there was this old thought that was like, oh, we need to just train that inner quad muscle, the mm-hmm. VMO, and that's going to strengthen it up and help pull that patella laterally. And there's also,
medially,
towards the inside of the knee so that it'll track more straight up and down. And there's a specific ligament called the MPFL, the medial patellofemoral ligament, that is kind of meant to give that patella some medial stability.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a ligament that they say will get injured a lot if people have some of these, you know, lateral patellar dislocations or have lateral tracking of the patella. A lot of people will say, oh, that MPFL is lax. Now we need to train the VMO to get it to track more medially. And we just have kind of learned that spot training of the VMO, it's not going to do anything in the composite of your patella tracking during dynamic movements like
yeah.
walking, running, jumping.
Exactly.
It just doesn't translate that way.
No, it's not going to change the structure of where your kneecap is moving. However, if we're focusing on training your VMO, so a lot of the exercises look like, knee extension type exercises, squeezing a ball, bridge type exercises, squeezing a ball. So things that like kind of activate that inner thigh and the quad at the same time. Mm-hmm. Do you think about that? And what, and ultimately it's not bad.
No.
Right. But we also have to think, okay, how is this movement extending my knee sitting and squeezing a ball going to translate to how I'm actually moving during exercise that hurts it, while I'm running, while I'm jumping, while I'm hiking? How is that movement going to translate? So we just have to make sure that we're actually doing movement that's going to translate to what my goal is, to what I'm getting back to. Because again, training that little VMO is not the answer. It's going to help to strengthen the quad complex, so your whole thigh.
Which can help with knee pain.
Which
having
can help.
Strong quads
totally.
Is... one of the things that they say, okay, if you have really strong, able quadriceps, you're less likely to have knee pain later in life.
Yeah.
So training your quad could help.
Not a bad idea, right? So, but we just have to understand that it's not just because I'm pulling my kneecap back into place.
Yeah.
And that's where then we can go into taping. Well, what is taping actually doing? Is taping pulling my knee back into place? How long do I have to tape for? What is actually happening?
I think one of the things we saw about taping, we were reading through and they said that it didn't matter, what was it, if the person was showing lateral or medial knee pain, was it? They did the taping and it helped both. Or it was shown to help both lateral and medial knee
outside,
pain.
Inside.
Outside and inside knee pain. For this same taping technique that was supposed to just help pull the kneecap
to the middle.
To the middle or to the inside.
Yeah.
It helped with both lateral and medial knee pain. So again, is this helping specifically a lateral structure, a medial structure, or is it just kind of taking advantage of these mechanoreceptors we talk a lot about and putting some compressive force on the knee, putting that tape around there, making our knee feel safe? Maybe helping some of those tendons and muscles stay a little more active because they feel that pressure and that feedback. Is that the mechanism we're tapping into here? That's what I would think.
That's what I think too. I mean, just that having that compressive forcing around also is just going to send signals to the brain to allow the brain to know, oh, there's pressure here. There's I'm supported. I'm safe, right? Yeah. So now I feel more comfortable moving and it's going to reduce some of those pain signals as well. So if taping is going to help to reduce the pain that you have during certain exercises and movements and you can start to get back to movement, great. Use it as understanding that it's not necessarily moving something back into place, because again, we have studies that show both that this is called like a McConnell type taping. And this was created by Jenny McConnell back in like the, I think it was 1984. She's from Australia. She's a physical therapist. Brilliant. This was very helpful, right? In understanding what's happening and how we can support the knee to get people back to movement. But ultimately, all we're saying is that it's helping to reduce pain so that we can get people to move better. And understanding that this isn't maybe necessarily what's pulling my knee back into place, so I don't have to rely on it. And I think that's the message that I really want to get across, that if this is going to help to reduce pain for the moment as you start to build back into these exercises, then great, use it.
Yeah.
But continue to know that it's not just pulling your knee back into place and you don't have to rely on it. Eventually, the goal is to do all of these exercises and movements without the tape at all.
And this is the same thing that we see with manual techniques. Like people will do a manual technique saying like, oh, this is specifically what I'm trying to address here. But really manual techniques more so give us this global feedback. Mm-hmm. So like we'll see people who have shoulder pain where a PT will say, okay, if I give this specific down glide, it'll help this pain versus giving an up glide, which are just mobilizations of the shoulder. And we'll find that doing a down glide or an up glide will help the shoulder, even if we thought a down glide is more specific. So same thing here with the knee, like I could do a whole bunch of things with the kneecap and a person would just have the same like global response of, oh, that feels a little bit better. Great if a few manual techniques help. I love doing manual techniques on people with telephemoral symptoms to get them to feel something different. And then let's go and do maybe an activity or an exercise that they weren't able to do before that.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, our hands are not magical. They're not mechanical guides. They are there are neurophysiological guides, which means that our touch, our force on your body is going to talk to the brain so that your body is then feeling something different, but we're not mechanically putting something back into place. And again, we're not mechanically putting something back into place. I think that just needs to be reiterated again and again and again, because it's like, I go to my PT so they fix me. No, we're not fixing you. Mm-mm. The tape isn't fixing you. Like, my hands aren't fixing you. They're just guiding this pain process within the body. So hopefully we can get you moving better, because ultimately the thing that's going to help above all is movement. You have to move. If you're going to see someone and you're just passively on a table for them to fix you, it's not doing anything.
Yeah, you need to move and you need to make some changes overall. Like, you can't just continue to do the same movement that you've been doing that has been painful. Like, something's got to change. We have to relook at how we've been doing things and reassess.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of PTs might just try saying something like, or again, a lot of professionals who are giving advice might say something like, okay, you just need a rest. You need to stop putting force through the knees. That's why you're putting too much force through the knees. So people will say that, oh, you need to avoid deep squats or you need to avoid this type of knee motion. When we were just looking at something that showed the peak forces through the knee and how it changes based on what part of the knee you're talking about. The anterior part of the knee feels the most the front part of the knee feels the most shear force when we're in just a little bit of bend from like 0 to 60. So we're feeling the most shear force and shear pressure in the front of the knee just with a little bit of bend.
Which would be reducing your squat. So imagine if someone said, don't squat as much.
Yeah.
Well, from 0 to 30, 0 to 60, I'm still putting that pressure right on the front of the knee.
So if you're having the most front or anterior knee pain, then that might be the thing that we don't want to load as much, but we still could get into like a 90 degree wall squat or something, or different exercises that for us may not be aggravating versus that 90 degree wall sit. That's when our quad is the most active. That's when we're feeling the most posterior, you know, forces in the knee. So again, if that's where our issue is, that's flaring up some of our knee pains, maybe those movements are more aggravating for us. So it's, you have to get with somebody who might be able to tease out for you which certain movements, which certain things are aggravating my knee pain or knee symptoms.
So this is where I would say a lot of people will say, okay, the front of the kneecap increased the force from 90 to 130. This is why I don't want to squat past 90, because I'm going to get the most force in that range. Yes. And if you listen back on our tendinosis podcast, which I recommend looking back at, that was a while ago. But what helps the structures that actually get this feedback that can heal is we need load. So if we're going to avoid load, we're actually avoiding healing. Again, it needs to be in a different way. So maybe I'm putting so much force at my knee excessively because I'm not moving well through my hips. Assess the hips. How's your internal rotation? How's your external rotation? Do you even know what those are? We need to assess how they're moving. We need to assess what muscles are activating when we're doing a movement, right? It's not just about the glutes. It's also about the quads. It's also about the hamstrings. But like, who's not picking up slack here?
How does a squat feel? How does a lunge feel? You know, just do your basic squats and do an inline lunge and see how you feel like you're activating through the hip, the knee, and all the way through the ankle. Just do a little bit of an assessment in front of a mirror. One of, you know, our favorite things to do with people is get them standing in front of a mirror, have them do some of their own basic movements that they may just not watch themselves do ever. And you can pick out some pretty amazing things about your own movement if you just become a little more observant, a little more critical in how you're assessing the way that you move.
And then how can you do it differently? So say your squat is hurting.
Yeah.
How can you do it differently? Can you move your feet? Can you change the angle of your foot? Can you make it more narrow? Can you make it wider? Can you change the way that your knee looks like it's moving? Maybe it's moving more toward the big toe. Can you make it move more toward the pinky toe? Can you change your position of your chest? Maybe your ankles aren't very mobile, right? Maybe you know that you have really stiff ankles. What if you raise the heels? What does that feel like? What if you slow down the movement? What does that feel like? Like, there's not one way to do it. And I know that us going over this can feel and sound really overwhelming. Well, then what do I do, right? Get in front of a mirror, like Dom said, and just start to assess it and see, if I do something different, can I feel something different?
I think what you just outlined right there, if somebody was going to try one thing, getting in front of a mirror, putting your feet very narrow together, try and do a squat and pay attention to what your knees do. Put your feet shoulder width apart, try and do a squat. See what your knees, hips, ankles do. Put your feet very wide, same thing. And just doing those three things, you should be able to notice what your knees and hips tend to do or want to do. Then what you said, raise your heels and do the same three things again and see if that changes things. And doing that little test should give you some good feedback on how your body operates through six different variations of a squat.
Exactly. And then you could do the same for the lunge. And this is what I love about our community and the Optimal Body as well, as they continue to understand, oh, if I do something a little different, I feel something different in a squat, in a, like so many people come into the Optimal Body afraid to do HIIT workouts because that involves a lot of squatting or jumping or lunging. And then all of a sudden they realize I can do it. I just get to do it a little differently.
Yeah.
And that is my favorite thing to continue to teach. Like if I do a lunge and I just pull my front hip from the front leg back a little bit, and what if I rotated through my chest a little bit, that changes the angle of my knee.
Totally.
And that might alone take pressure off of how I'm feeling in the lunge or in a squat. Or it's just, it's amazing what you can feel when you start to learn something a little bit differently and explore it a little differently. And I think that's like the main message here. Yes, you want to address your ankle range of motion, your hip range of motion, your strength around your quad, your hamstring, your glutes, your calf, you know, your feet. And you just, we don't want you to stop moving. You have to move if you're going to feel something different. And that might never change the way that your patella is tracking.
I think that that's so valuable to put in. And, you know, you mentioned the Optimal Body, and I think it's valuable for people to understand why you do some of these movements so many different ways. Like if you start going through the Optimal Body membership and noticing how many different ways you do a lunge, how many different ways you do variations of squats, you know, you're putting your back foot up on this thing, then you're crossing your leg over and you're doing a different variation of like a curtsy lunge or a curtsy squat of sorts. But all it's doing is getting you putting your hips and your knees and your ankles in slightly different variations and doing the same movement. Just as we do in life, when we go and sit on a bench versus we go and sit in bleachers versus we get into our car, we're doing some different variation of a squat, either single or double legged. And we need to be ready to do those in life, out in the real world, in a very variable environment where it's not just always perfect cookie cutter, where we can move one specific way. That's not how our bodies work. That's not how the world works.
And that's why I like things like Gray Institute too.
Yeah.
Because it puts you, there's seven different ways to do a squat in the Gray Institute. And I love that. And I should post that again because there's just so many different ways. And it makes you do like a narrow squat versus a wide squat versus a turnout squat versus a staggered stance versus internal rotation and external rotation and all these different ways that you're putting the feet and the hips and the body and saying, go within your range. So some squats might look deeper than others, you know, and you listen to your body. Again, you change it based on what your body needs. It doesn't always have to look like me or you, or there's no one way to do anything. And I think that's always our message of the Optimal Body, is you got to find what optimal means for you. But ultimately, I think, you know, my takeaway and what I hope that people can receive out of this podcast, and you can say something for you, is that know that your structure and how you look in your body and the way that it moves might look different from someone else, and that's okay. And ultimately continuing to move and find what works best for your body and what feels best, because the structure might not change again. So what feels best is possible to obtain. You can still do your goals and reach them. It just might look a little different throughout the journey.
Totally. And I'd say that one of the things that I want to bring up, I mean, you brought up the seven different ways to do a squat from the Gray Institute, or even what we were talking about, those six different variations you could try yourself at home. you will find one or two or three that are more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people want to avoid doing those.
Yeah.
Or want to adjust how they do those to make it easier. And my message would be, try to live into the hard ones, live into the difficult ones, so that they may become a little bit more easier, a little bit easier to navigate in your life. I mean, a lot of us want to do the thing that's easy for us. We want to do the thing that's comfortable for us because that makes us feel good. Doing the thing that's a little bit more difficult for us, feeling okay living into that discomfort and trying to learn how to better navigate it, will make us more aware of that in our everyday life.
Thank you so much for sticking with us on another PT Pearl. I hope you guys are just continuing to learn so much and question. That is what we want you to take out of a lot of these things. It's not just for a fact. There's not just hard rules. It's questioning, does this tape matter? Does this tracking matter? Does this diagnosis matter? And how can I do something to feel a little different in my body? So hopefully you're enjoying this. If you have more questions, you can always email us at jen@docgenfit.com or you can DM us. One of the things that I will say above all is that leaving reviews, subscribing to the podcast just helps us to get out there to so many more people, because a lot of people have these questions. A lot of people are told, you know, your knees are tracking wrong and that's the reason for all your pain, or you have to tape every time. And that's not always the case. And hopefully you're learning that. So the more that you leave a review and rate us, the more that other people can start to learn and free up this psychology of diagnosis and pain around the body and hopefully start to feel better. So please, if you would, subscribe and rate and review. We just so appreciate you taking the time, and we'll see you next time.